John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live at 710sports.com. On demand everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app. Now, John Clayton.
And joining us on the Venue Kings hotline is Bob Condotta from the Seattle Times in Chicago for tonight's game against the Chicago Bears. And, boy, I tell you what, I mean, you have to go back a long way to see some of the depth issues that are with this team right now. You know, the fact that they had to cut their starting defensive tackle to squeeze in two players to help out on defense. Now that they, you know, they don't know what they really have at cornerback. I mean, you know, you talk about mystery. There's a lot of mysteries coming for this game, Bob.
Yeah, it really is. It's funny. We were talking last night, and someone was saying that, well, they've always had a good knack for rising to the occasions and situations like this. But I was saying, but this isn't really they anymore. I think they'll have something like 25 guys on their 53-man roster tonight who are new to the team this year. So this is hardly the, you know, kind of the same old Seahawks, really. You know, because it's Russell and Earl Thomas and a couple guys like that. You know, you can still maybe look at it nationally and think it's the Seahawks. But you're right. I mean, I think most associations of this team with the teams of 12, 13, 14, 15, pretty much got to go out the window at this point.
Oh, yeah, no question about it. I mean, what do they do if Shaquille Griffin can't play because of his hamstring injury?
Yeah, I mean, the sense I got with Shaquille will probably be okay, but, yeah, some combination of what they have. You know, Justin Coleman, I think he can play outside if they need him to. We certainly saw some of that in training camp from time to time. You know, you've got Nico Thorpe, you've got Akeem King. You sort of just, you know, kind of roll with those guys and hope that they can get the job done and kind of make it some combination of those guys. I don't know if there's any real miracle there other than just hoping that the guys you have on your roster can suddenly get the job done.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, no question about it. And, of course, how surprised were you when you found out that Tom Johnson, starting defensive tackle, guy that they wanted at the three technique, ended up getting at least temporarily cut? I mean, he was cut. I would imagine they can sign him back because he had a $900,000 signing bonus, and, you know, his guaranteed base salary is $950,000. I mean, they can put him back on the roster on Tuesday if they wish, and then he really only misses, like, you know, one roster game check of 15,625. But how surprised were you when you saw that happen?
Yeah, for sure. It definitely was a head scratcher, and you know, it wasn't until like you just explained it makes more sense when you look at it from that standpoint. And you know, you don't want to have waived one of the young guys. It was interesting. I actually asked Pete Carroll about that on Saturday, I guess it was, and he talked about making the best decisions here for the long haul. And that struck me that, you know, if they were to lose Tom Johnson somehow, they could probably live with that because he's probably a guy who's only going to be here for 1 year, as opposed to if you tried to waive one of the younger guys and they get claimed, and then, you know, a guy maybe you're counting on for a few years at a relatively small salary to help you, you might lose them. But it definitely, I mean, that and, you know, the Michael Kendrick signing, I mean, I think each of those moves really spoke to the desperation that the team is in right now. And you're right, this is not a situation this team has been in. Maybe the first year of the Pete Carroll era, but they were in such a different overall situation then where it was understood you're rebuilding and you're just going to do whatever. You know, for this team being where they were, say, only, you know, 24 months ago, you know, when they looked like still a Super Bowl kind of team, when they went to New England in November of 2016. And after that game, people were writing about them like, yeah, they're still as good as anybody in the NFL. To sort of be where they are now, I guess we'll really find out tonight on the field where they are exactly.
Yeah, I mean, because again, it's such a new team, and there's so many issues, whether either it's young players or whether it's guys that are, you know, new to the team or whatever. I mean, there's just so many things that are up in the air. Who do you think emerges as the number one receiver while they wait for Doug Baldwin to return?
Well, I might answer that two ways. I think Brandon Marshall could be your number one target in a lot of situations and be your guy who's going to score more of your touchdowns. I really think they need Tyler Lockett to step up, though, and really, you know, they just signed into that big contract. They need him now to prove worthy of that. And, you know, he played all but one snap last week, so it's not like he can play more, but they can certainly try to target him more. I would imagine he will play more. I mean, he did last week. You know, once Doug went out, he played more on the slot, sort of took on more of Doug Baldwin's role that way. When you're doing it on the fly, sometimes maybe it's a little more difficult to make that work. I would imagine this week he practiced there. most of the week and, you know, kind of understood in the game plan, okay, that's where Tyler's going to be. Let's get him some balls and things like that. So I would think that he would become your guy who gets more of your targets. But, you know, they need Jerron Brown to step up too. I mean, another guy they signed in the offseason, he really only had one catch sort of, you know, on that last drive. I don't want to say garbage time, but certainly not necessarily when he completely, you know, he didn't do anything really until then, and they need him to really step up and do more of that too. So, but, you know, if you ask me one guy who's going to get a lot more catches, I think it's got to be Tyler Lockett.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no question. The question is going to be how much they play him in the slot, how much they play him to the outside, and kind of the game plan with him. And you figure Jerron Brown and Marshall are probably more of the outside guys, so they definitely need to try to get that going on the passing side, and we'll see how much two tight end they're going to use. Because I would imagine when you have two edge rushers like Leonard Floyd, who's still not 100% healthy, and Khalil Mack, who's 100% just dominating, you know, that creates a lot of problems for this team.
No doubt. And you're right. And, you know, they picked up Darryl Daniels. I don't know if maybe he plays at all in tight end situations this week, the former UW Husky. But, yeah, Nick Vinette, another guy who is going to become a key guy. And that's, you know, that's really the theme of the season is those draft classes of 16 and 17 and 18, especially 16 and 17. There's a lot of guys that they've been waiting for them to really come through, and this is when those guys have to do it. And that's, you know, what the bulk of this team is anymore is guys acquired since 2016, either through the draft or free agency or whatever. And that's what they need now. They need to be proven right on some of the assessments they made of some of these guys. But you're totally right. You know, the pass rush situation is going to be the big thing tonight. Looking at the Chicago paper today, you know, one of the big headlines, Monsters, Inc., and kind of talking about, they're already sort of talking about, can this defense get back to being a defense that's known for, you know, the Chicago Bears always been, for longtime football fans, always been known for having really good defenses, even if their offenses weren't always that great. Can this be a team that can be that way again, and especially with the addition of Khalil Mack? So, you know, it's the first chance for the home fans this year to see Mack. So that is going to be a huge challenge for the Seahawks tonight.
Yeah. Not going to be easy whatsoever. What things do they need to do to get the running game going? Because I think that was probably the biggest surprise, if you want to call it disappointment, from last week, in the sense that they just didn't seem to have the commitment to the run that they talked about the entire offseason and through training camp.
Yeah, it was sort of weird that way when they came out. You know, I think they just had a play they wanted to try early in the game, maybe catch Denver off guard. You get a big play there. But, yeah, coming out of the gate passing, you get sacked, you get behind the sticks. You know, they weren't necessarily way behind the whole game, but I think they just felt like it became that sort of game where you had to throw it a little bit more because Denver seemed to be scoring fairly easily. So, I would imagine tonight they are just going to force it, and they are just going to run it a lot and, you know, run it until it just makes no sense to run it, you know, if that were to happen. I think having Chris Carson, I think they went in last week with an idea of kind of rotating Carson and Penny. In part, they wanted to see Penny. In part, also the conditions that were there. I think tonight, I think they'll just kind of roll with Chris Carson and give him the ball out early. And if he's doing well, then they'll just let him continue to do that and hope that that helps. I think you need to get Russell more involved in the running game as well. You know, he didn't really, you know, they called a couple of zone reads. He didn't seem to be much of a factor in that. I think maybe they need him to just get more aggressive and be that way too, because their running game in the Russell Wilson era has always thrived the most when there's at least a real threat that he can take off and run with it at any time. And, he sort of just has to show that from time to time, I think, for that to be continue to be perceived as that real kind of threat.
So what do they need to do now? I mean, how are they going to sort this out at the linebacker position? Because they sign Michael Kendricks. I mean, he's a weak side linebacker coming off a Super Bowl team, but, of course, is waiting to find out how his appeal on his suspension is going to be for the fact that he had the insider trading that he's pleaded guilty to. I mean, you know, who plays middle linebacker? Who plays weak side linebacker?
Well, I guess my hunch is Austin Calitro plays in the middle and Kendricks plays weak side. It would seem like playing middle linebacker immediately with sort of the setting the defense type responsibilities that the middle linebacker typically has, you know, being the guy who has the headset and everything. Calitro has done that all through the offseason, all through training camp as Bobby Wagner's backup. So it makes more sense to me that he would be there and Kendricks would be on the weak side. But, and Kendricks has, I think, played more, primarily as a weak side linebacker in his time with the Eagles. So that's what sort of makes sense to me. But I guess you never know for sure how they might do those kinds of things. Calitro played weak side last week know, Shaquem Griffin had some struggles early in the game, and they put him there, so he obviously can do that. But some combination, obviously, of those two guys are going to be in the middle. But I guess if I had to bet, I would put Kalitro in the middle and Kendricks on the weak side.
You know, it's going to be interesting to see how it all sorts out. So everybody will be watching to see this Monday night game to find out where this Seahawks team is. Hey, Bob, you can read about it on the Seattle Times with Bob Condotta. Hey, Bob, thanks for joining us on the Venue Kings Hotline.
Yeah, okay. Thanks a lot, John. Talk to you later. Bye.
Hey, you can check out the show on the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Coming up next, we will go and take the grade book out with the report card. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On demand with the 710 Seattle Sports app. It's time for the Report Card with the Professor.
And the Report Card is our daily production where what we do is we'll grade the good, the bad, the ugly, the silly, the smart, the absolutely crazy, the sane, all the things that we will be grading, whether it's an action of somebody, a comment by somebody, whether it's a coach, GM, you will find out who it's going to be, whether it's going to be some player who just might have to retire in the middle of a football game. All those things are under the grade book, under the report card. So, Maura, what do we have?
Well, there's a lot of frustration in football that's going to be in the report card today, but we'll start with something good and fun here. Ryan Fitzpatrick, all of a sudden in his 13th season, is off to the start of his career with 8 touchdowns. So he was having a little fun after the game yesterday. He came out to do the press conference dressed in Deshaun Jackson's clothes. He had on sunglasses, a little sport like track jacket that was half unzipped with a big chain on. And the reporters asked him about it, and he had a little bit of fun.
Hey, DJ. I got like 2 more because DJ needs his stuff back.
What is yours? Is any of that yours, or is
the
that...
The chest hair is mine.
Pretty funny stuff.
He did have quite the hairy chest poking out from under that unzipped jacket.
And how many Harvard grads do you think have a beard like that? Because he has that big old bushy beard. I mean, it's kind of funny. But what a great story. I mean, do you see his quarterback rating is like, it's like 151.3 or something of that nature?
Insane.
You know, he's 8 touchdown passes. I mean, he's been incredible. I think he's completed like 79% of his passes. So it's great to see. And did you see what ended up happening? They got into the locker room, and I guess that Jameis Winston sent congratulations to all the receivers and that, just to kind of, you know, give them word that, hey, I'm just about another week away from coming back and being off my be on the radar. But it's like I can't imagine them going to Jameis Winston if Ryan Fitzpatrick continues to play anywhere close to the way that he's playing right now. He's been fantastic.
Yeah. Ryan Fitzpatrick's already thrown more touchdown passes to Deshaun Jackson, I think, than Winston has ever just this season.
Well, and it's kind of interesting because, I mean, one of the things that happened last year was that they did not have good sync between Jameis Winston and Deshaun Jackson.
Yeah.
That did not work out, and it seems like the first thing that Fitzpatrick did is work it out so that he can get things going with Deshaun Jackson, who's a very good receiver, and he also knew that Deshaun was all motivated because it was about a Philadelphia Eagle team that got rid of him. So for Fitzpatrick, I think we have to give an A, because I know when I was writing some stuff yesterday, I was thinking, okay, well, Patrick Mahomes has been the best quarterback in the first 2 weeks of the season, you know, with his 10 touchdown passes and 40 points a game. And then you look at Deshaun Jackson, and it's like, whoa, wait a second here. Deshaun has you got Fitzpatrick with a higher quarterback rating and 8 touchdowns and a higher completion percentage. So let's put it this way. Fitzpatrick has been one of the stories of the season so far, and he gets nothing but good grades.
Yeah, we'll see how long it lasts because he has kind of a history of peaking and then taking a dive. But I don't see how you can bench him at this point.
Yeah. By the way, it's now official. The Vikings have cut Daniel Carlson, their drafted kicker, and it's now official. They have notified Zane Gonzalez, the Cleveland kicker, who missed 4 kicks yesterday, that he's gone. So, in fact, they've already replaced him by getting Greg Joseph in there as a kicker who they signed, who used to be with the Miami Dolphins. So, as expected, 2 kicking changes today. And then, of course, with Greg Zuerlein being hurt with a groin injury, Sam Ficken went up going to the Los Angeles Rams. So, 3 kicking changes today.
Wow. Well, some other struggles that were going on yesterday, John, the Steelers are not off to the greatest start. Big Ben has 6 turnovers and only 4 touchdowns. And you can see the frustrations kind of mounting with Le'Veon Bell not there. Someone on Twitter said Antonio Brown needs to thank his lucky stars because he was drafted by a team that had Ben, and Ben got Antonio Brown paid. You know darn well he wouldn't put up those numbers for other teams. Brown then responded with, trade me and find out.
Yeah, can you imagine that? I mean, to add more controversy and add more problems to a start of a season like this, with Le'Veon Bell missing 2 games, the team off to an 0-1 start, the defense just having a horrible day, giving up 6 touchdown passes, you know, not being in position to make tackles. I mean, this whole Pittsburgh situation draws an F, a big F, because it has just been an absolute, complete, and total disaster, and one that is, I think, caught everybody by surprise. And so, now Antonio Brown has to add to the controversy by, you know, now at least responding and saying, well, trade me, we'll find out. Well, I mean, it's like you got Le'Veon Bell thinking about next year's free agency more than he is this year's team. You got Antonio Brown all hyped up and mad and all this stuff. This is just an absolute disaster. Certainly one of the worst starts I can ever see a Steeler team have. So yeah, they're getting F's all across the board. By the way, it looks like the Vikings are going to be able to talk Dan Bailey into coming in there and being their kicker. We'll see what kind of money he's going to make, because remember, he was making $3.4 million. Vikings have some room under the cap, but we'll see where that goes.
Well, yeah, I mean, they are a Super Bowl competitor, so they need to make that happen. Might be worth it to pay the man.
Mm-hmm.
Well, next up we have Clay Matthews. We talked about this earlier. His sack of Kirk Cousins late in yesterday's game wiped out what could have been a game-clinching interception by Jaire Alexander. Referee Tony Corrente explained that the penalty was because of the new body weight rule, that Matthews picked Cousins up and slammed him into the ground, but no one else seemed to agree with that. This was Clay Matthews pretty upset after the game.
You seem like you're about to pull your hair out about this, but you don't know what...
Well, no, I know what to say. It's just, I don't want to lose any more money. You know? Maybe I'll go back, watch the film, see if there's anything I can change. But at the same time, I felt pretty good about that hit. You know, it's just, you put in so much work and you hate for one play to, I take a lot of responsibility with the way in which I play the game. So, you know, there's obviously not one play that defines a game, but at the same time, pivotal. I messed this up last week. Pivotal. Little play, you know, so I don't know. I don't know. I don't know what to say, guys. I mean, it is what it is.
And, of course, the play that's, I mean, because basically he kind of wrapped his arm around, his right arm around the quarterback, and was almost trying to at least lessen the blow by taking him down. And, of course, he's still charging in there. I mean, I can't imagine that there's any way humanly possible he could have stopped that. And so, I mean, I think Tony Corrente deserves an F for that call. And it really cost the Packers a victory, because they should have won that game. It was 29-21. It was a game that that interception by Alexander would have sealed the fate. Now they get a second chance. And again, the play basically is called burping the quarterback. So burping the quarterback should be worth a 15-yard penalty. I have a belch to that one. So I have to give an F to Corrente, and I give a B right now to Clay Matthews, and kind of feel sorry for him.
Yeah, I do too. Some of these I can at least kind of see what the referee was thinking, but I don't think anyone agrees with that yesterday. That was about the most you can do as a defender to not target the quarterback or, you know, take him down. And it's not like he body slammed him or anything. It looked like a clean hit.
No.
All right, that's it for grades today.
That's what Corrente thought. It was more of a body slam, and it wasn't the case.
No.
Not good. Not good. Okay, so you can check out the show on the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Coming up next, we are going to take your text questions after what was a very busy Sunday in the National Football League. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
John Clayton,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios,
on demand with the 710 Seattle Sports app.
And, of course, giving you an update of what's happening in the National Football League. Carson Wentz is going to start the game coming up this week in Week 3. He's been cleared for practice and contact. Looks like there's been 2 kickers that have been cut. They did cut Daniel Carlson. No surprise there, after 3 missed field goals in Minnesota. It looks like they're signing Dan Bailey. They also had the change with Zane Gonzalez, him getting cut with the Cleveland Browns. They signed, going out and getting, a guy like Greg Jones. Joseph, he signs. Looks like Mike Wallace has a fracture in his leg, and so he's going to miss some time. Cam Robinson, left tackle of the Jaguars, blew out his ACL. He's done for the season. John Jalapeo, the center for the New York Giants, broke his ankle. He's done for the season. And, of course, we are now taking your text questions at 710-710. So, Maura, what do we have?
First up, the 360 says, is Mike Tomlin on the hot seat?
You know, I don't think so, because this is a franchise that's only had three coaches since the late 1960s. But I think that you can see in Pittsburgh, they're writing a lot of things in that regard, because, I mean, this team right now is a little bit out of control. They had a very bad game to start the season against Cleveland and a horrible game yesterday. So I'd say right now he isn't, but I think that stay tuned if this thing continues to spiral out, because look at all the problems. No Le'Veon Bell. They have Antonio Brown now hinting about a trade, because he's not happy with the criticism that he's taking. All those things seem to be working against this team right now and working against Mike Tomlin. Is he on the hot seat now? No, but stay tuned.
Tyler and Fife wants to know, if the Seahawks are worried about Khalil Mack rushing, why don't they have a better hard count?
A better hard count? I don't think that's going to be an issue. I mean, the hard count, I think, is fine. That's quarterback has to make sure, number one, he's got the communication, and, you know, Russell seems to do that pretty well. I mean, as you watch at the line of scrimmage, he does, you know, kind of bob his head a little bit and try to do that. I don't think the hard count is any issue. And again, it's like, what's the idea? Is he going to draw him off sides? For the most part, no. And so it's a matter that, maybe some adjustment in the tempo of the game, going a little bit faster. Certainly getting rid of the ball quicker is going to be one of the answers. I don't think that the hard count is any real part of this.
425 says, John, how does the Seahawks injury situation rank amongst those of the other NFL teams right now?
I mean, it's not as bad as you say the Houston Texans, because, I mean, you know, the Texans, if you go back, and they're really down about five starters, because remember they had a couple guys that haven't made it back. Andre Hall had the lymphoma problem. You know, their starting tight end had a neck injury. He had to retire. They've had two changes on the offensive line, got another injury yesterday. So they're about the worst right now. I'd say that, Carolina Panthers, I mean, look at them yesterday. They were down their top three offensive linemen, you know, two on the injured reserve list. Then, of course, Greg Olsen, he's out, so they're in worse shape. You look at the Atlanta Falcons. I mean, they got down their two best young defensive players in Neal and Deion Jones. They're out. And then, of course, their fill-in safety had to come in and get an ejection for a helmet hit. So they were really down. So, it's starting to add up around the league. I was counting it up. I mean, if you include suspensions in that, there was 88 missed starts so far in the league, and that'll include some of the Seahawks, compared to about 80 last year. So injuries are a little bit higher this year. No surprise, when training camp's going to be that light, preseason's going to be that light, you pay for it at the start of the regular season.
206 says, Professor, please don't retire in the middle of your show. Like Vontae Davis.
Why would I do that? Yeah, okay, that's pretty funny. Yeah, I had to think about it for a second. No, it's like, fortunately, we don't have a halftime. We don't have a 12-minute break. You know, what do we have, like about 6-minute breaks or something like that, 6 or 7-minute breaks? But, yeah, I mean, that was just Vontae Davis. I just cannot believe the fact that he had the, as you would call it, the disrespect, as Lorenzo Alexander said, to go ahead and quit at halftime of a game that he was starting. Now, remember, he was upset last week that he was a healthy scratch, and so they had him on the active roster. He started a cornerback, and then at halftime he decides, well, I think I'm going to quit. This is after getting like a $5 million contract. Absolutely unbelievable that he would do that.
It blows my mind. And I know he released a statement. He tried to make it sound better, but I still, no. I think even if you decide, oh, maybe I've had one too many head injuries, maybe I feel like I can't get through this. Like, you sit, you tell the coach you want to sit, and you still stay and support your teammates. You don't leave in the middle of a game.
Well, and then even worse, you just put on your clothes and just leave.
Yeah,
it's like,
no.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Although LeGarrette Blount did do that to the Steelers, but then he just completely left. I mean, he was off
the field. Yeah, that was in the fourth quarter of a game and just kind of walked off the field. I mean, it wasn't at halftime. It's like, okay, so now you're supposed to like cover for the starting cornerback? That's ridiculous.
The 425 wants to know, what is Ifedi's contract status at the end of the year, and would it be wise to see him at guard for a while just in case he is actually a good guard?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be opposed to seeing him back at guard. Although, again, if it's if J.R. Sweezy and Fluker do well, then you don't do that. But I think that that has to be a consideration. Now, again, he's blocked better than people have thought the last couple weeks. That gives you some encouragement. But, I mean, if he has as bad of a game as he some of the ones he had in the preseason, bad of the games as he had last year, I think that's got to be a consideration. Or, I mean, you figure out who your best five offensive linemen is. And if George Fant is your best offensive lineman of the five at tackle, then you put him at right tackle and put Ifedi down. I mean, again, Ethan Posick looks like he's done a good job. You know, Sweezy's too early to judge because he missed so much time in training camp with his high ankle sprain, and you don't know where he is health-wise. So, hey, but, you know, a lot of pressures on Ifedi, as there should be, and his contract status is, you know, he's in year three of a four-year contract. You know, you would figure the way he's played, they're not going to hit the fifth-year option on him. So this could be his last year coming up next year, but if he continues to do some bad things, then that might be the worst. I mean, he could be gone this year.
253 says, hi, John. Don't we always marvel at the Chiefs every September to watch them just stink afterwards? Are you thinking this isn't a fluke like every other year?
Well, I mean, the one thing I think that you can see, and this is what I thought, and this is obviously what Andy Reid thought, he loved what he had in Alex Smith, but he didn't know if Alex Smith could win many playoff games. In the selection of Patrick Mahomes, I mean, he looked at a quarterback that at some point could turn around and maybe win the playoff games he wasn't able to win, and so now what you're looking at, he's advanced him faster. I mean, he's already gone. But think about this. He's had 10 touchdown passes in two games against two playoff-caliber teams, the Chargers and the Steelers, and you know, he scored 40 points against those two teams on the average. And so I think that what you're looking at is that they think he's a Super Bowl quarterback. And right now, I think he's put himself in a position where he's really looking good. And, you know, I think he can avert that problem that the Chiefs have of winning the playoff, losing the playoff games.
All right, the 360 says, JC, considering all the injuries on our defensive side, who gives up 100 yards rushing, the Hawks or the Bears or both tonight?
Probably neither, although I guess probably there's going to be more of a chance that the Seahawks will do it because they've had a little bit more of a history of doing it, and the Seahawks have not had the history of having the 100-yard games on rushing. I mean, they've got a great 1-2 punch. Tarik Cohen's a very good small back that can cause you problems. I mean, you know, Jordan Howard is one of the better first-down, early-down backs in the league, so they probably have more of a chance to get 100 yards rushing.
360 wants to know how you think Carson Wentz is going to do his first week back. I think they have the Colts.
I think he'll be a little bit rusty. I mean, I think you saw that in Andrew Luck, but I think as time goes on, and also, too, they're going to be kind of short on wide receivers. They don't know if Alshon Jeffries is going to be back this week, although they think they can. Mike Wallace has a fracture in his leg, and so he's going to miss some time. So they're really thin and kind of wonder, do they make the move and go for Josh Gordon, although Gordon probably can't help him immediately because, remember, he suffered that terrible hamstring injury on a photo shoot.
425 says, is there any hope in Detroit? I need a light at the end of the tunnel, even if it's a train.
Yeah, I think the train is probably the one that's coming the most because, I mean, that was pretty pretty bad the last 2 weeks. Obviously better going out there, having to come back with the help of Jimmy Garoppolo with that interception, but still a kind of a questionable penalty that was there on the defense, on a defensive holding penalty. That was questionable, but right now I don't think it looks very good because, again, you can see that defensively they're not doing a good job. You know, they got Darius Slay. He suffered a concussion in the game. Don't know what his status is going to be. You know, Matthew Stafford continues to throw way too many bad passes and interceptions. I mean, this thing right now is a budding disaster. And so with that in mind, you know, it's off to an 0-2 start. And right now, things could slip away real fast with that team.
425 says, Frank Gore is now the NFL's fourth leading all-time rusher. Why doesn't it feel like he belongs among the elite NFL running backs of all time?
I think because, I mean, he's such a quiet personality. I mean, I like him because I know when I go into the locker room, he always comes over, gives me a hug, and asks me questions and stuff like that. I like him a lot. But, yeah, I mean, he's just so quiet, and he just doesn't seem to have that national reputation. I mean, yesterday he had an incredible play. I think they had a 3rd and 19, and he ran for 20 yards. That was remarkable. I mean, that's how good this guy is. I mean, now, the fourth best runner all time, Hall of Fame. I guess, you know, his Hall of Fame-type career is kind of like Brandon Marshall, even though Brandon Marshall was, you know, more dynamic, more in the news, all those different things. But he kind of slipped through the cracks. But, boy, what an acquired taste. 35-year-old running back turning 3rd and 19s into first downs.
All right, that's it for text today.
Okay, and you can check out the show in the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. And so, and of course, you know, don't forget the game tonight is going to be against the Chicago Bears, a big Monday night game, an important Monday night game, a game that the Seahawks really do need to win, and it's going to be very tough to do. And, you know, you can find out, of course, the game is going to be on, you know, on at 5:30 as far as the game on the kickoff. And so don't forget about that. And, of course, that's going to be here on 710 ESPN Seattle. The Mariner game can be heard in its entirety on AM 770 KTTH. Coming back next, we'll talk to Dave Grosby, John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The Professor, John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
And joining us right now is Dave Grosby. And so, Dave, when we talked on Saturday, it was a little too early for the injury report. Now we find out the injury report for tonight's game against the Chicago Bears turns out to be worse than anticipated, in the sense that now you've got six guys that are either out or doubtful for this game, including Bobby Wagner, who's not going to play, including K.J. Wright, you know, including Trey Flowers. We'll find out if Shaquille Griffin's going to be able to play. He's questionable, but man, this team really comes in understaffed going to Soldier Field.
Up to the quarterback. You got yourselves a franchise quarterback. You need to just the strategy's got to be to just hang in there, and within a touchdown in the fourth quarter, unlike last week, have them win it this week. But I would agree with you. I think they're in very, very deep in a very difficult spot.
Do you feel worse about this week's game than last week's in Denver?
In terms of winning or losing?
In terms of winning or losing, yeah.
Yeah, probably. I just look at the Seahawks on defense, and, you know, the one thing the Bears, I keep thinking of that Bears first half, and they did a tremendous amount of misdirection in their offense, which was not surprising considering their new head coach and what he did in Kansas City. And that requires a defense with great communication, guys who understand each other can you know, I mean, have an absolute certainty of where the guy next to them is going to be at times, and won't over-pursue and will stay in their lanes and follow their assignments, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And instead, the Seahawks bring in a defense with a bunch of new pieces, with a bunch of new guys who haven't played together, and a bunch of rookies. It seems like it's kind of tailor-made for the Bears' offense to have a big day.
Yeah, no doubt. And because, you know, the Bears are a good running team. They're not necessarily a good passing team yet, because Mitch Trubisky is still trying to learn the game at quarterback, and that's still going to be a process. But, you know, if they can't get any pressure on him, which they didn't get any pressure on Case Keenum last week, then this is going to be very difficult.
Yeah, it's like I said, you know, your X factor is the same as it would be if Bobby Wagner was there, and that's, you know, you've got the advantage at quarterback. You have the advantage at the most important position. We'll see if that can be enough or not, but I have my doubts. Of course, I think the records, I think for teams, what did I see in like the last 108 teams to start 0-2, only six made the postseason, although one of them was the Seahawks. The year Cam Chancellor, of course, had set out, but it kind of shows how important this game is, really, just into week two.
Yeah, I mean, there's more teams in that percentage, because, I mean, you go back and, you know, the Saints were 0-2 for the last 4 years, not counting this year, but they won 11 games last year. And so I think, I don't know, it was like about 20%, but it's not many. I mean, that's true. But at 0-2, they can still make it. But, you know, I don't know if they will be able to make it with all the issues they have right now if they get off to an 0-2 start, because I thought going in this would be an 8 or 9 win team. But I did this anticipating they would at least get a split or maybe two wins on the road, because if you can't win, you know, in Denver with that turnaround at quarterback, or Chicago with the youngest quarterback, or at least one of the most unproven quarterbacks in this conference, then it's going to be tough to win 8 games or more.
It certainly is, John. They just again emphasizes the importance of tonight's game, and you know, they've got a great record in terms of playing in primetime games. We'll see if that helps them out at all.
Mm-hmm. But that's the thing. That's where the primetime quarterback has to come out, and you're right about that. And they, you know, they can't have the turnovers that he had it last week with the two interceptions. You know, they need him to get the running game going. I think that's vital, because I think it's pretty clear. I mean, when you have to take Michael Kendricks, who's fighting a suspension and is just really available for you don't know how long, to squeeze in one game, you cut your starting defensive tackle just to squeeze him on the roster, then it's like, wow, you are really up against it.
No kidding, man. No kidding. An interesting week, too, though, wasn't it?
Oh, it really was. What captured your imagination on that Green Bay game? Because I found that to be, you know, really a defining game for the first 2 weeks of the season, because you had your controversial quarterback hit that probably cost the Packers a chance to win. You know, the bad call, I thought, on Clay Matthews, because, you know, he did what is now known in the NFL as burping the quarterback. You kind of grab him around the back. You try to take him down, but not try to hurt him. And he gets the 15-yard flag to cancel the interception that, you know, would have sealed the game for the Packers.
True, and I hate that call, and I told you that after week one, and it's going to be controversial, though there were so many opportunities after that, so many twists and turns after that, that it's hard to look at that as a key play, but you're right, it would have probably aced things out. I think that the fact you had another tie, the bad field goal kicking that you had was a big story in that game, but both, I guess my takeaway was both those teams look pretty elite to me. Both those teams look really good, and I would expect both of them to be in the postseason.
Yeah, I would agree with that. But now the advantage goes to the Vikings. But have you ever seen a day where kicking was as bad as this?
No, and I mean you feel for the poor Browns who just just unbelievable. You know, were set up twice to win that game and couldn't win it, and they're going to change kickers today, obviously. And no, I can't recall a day where the kicking was so bad. You know, actually, what stood out was when the kicking was good.
Go
ahead.
18 missed kicks yesterday.
Wow. You keep track of that, John? Is that a record?
Points? I don't know if it's a record, but because, again, sometimes you get into those November, December games where the weather conditions cause problems. But, you know, I know in week one there was 15 missed kicks. In this one there was 18 missed kicks. You know, 11 field goals, 7 extra points.
And some of them seemed really critical, didn't they?
Oh yeah, I mean the ones that was Zane Gonzalez. I mean, it was unbelievable how bad he was. I mean, what, it was 18-18. He misses the extra point, and then he comes back and missed what would have been the game tying field goal. Then of course, how about two misses in overtime by the now former Viking Daniel Carlson, who missed three total. He missed two in the Seahawks game, and I know that Mike Zimmer wanted to cut him then. Now he wasted no time in cutting him and signing former Dallas Cowboy kicker Dan Bailey.
Yeah, who I thought was kind of the best guy sitting out there. I mean, that was a big story. And, of course, Patrick Mahomes, 6 touchdown passes, and Ryan Fitzpatrick, the old guy, just being unbelievable again in beating Philadelphia. I mean, what is Tampa going to do next week or the week after that?
I think it's pretty keep riding
Why would you not?
Yeah, because he's been fantastic, and look how well he's doing. I mean, he's getting the most out of DeSean Jackson. That's something that Jameis Winston was not able to do. He's had his quarterback rating is, I think, was a 151.3 or 153.1. Patrick Mahomes is sitting there, I think, at about 148 or so. I mean, the two most incredible quarterbacks are what you didn't expect. Patrick Mahomes, who's been amazing, and Ryan Fitzpatrick, who then had to wear some of the DeSean Jackson outfit yesterday to have his chest hairs exposed.
Yeah, I know. Saying that was the Ivy League look for Florida or something like that. He's already a folk hero down there.
I know. I mean, it's incredible, but what a story, because, I think everybody thought that, I know I did, when Tampa Bay got their schedule, they find out that Jameis Winston has a 3-game suspension, that they were going to go 0-3, because they started out in New Orleans, and here's Fitzpatrick coming off the bench, or coming out there and getting 48 points and throwing for 417 yards. Then you have the 27-point effort yesterday, beating Philadelphia, and then now they've got Pittsburgh coming up, and Pittsburgh's an absolute mess. I mean,
yeah,
a mess
no
in the
kidding.
Sense that Le'Veon Bell's holding out. Antonio Brown's now taking the criticism and saying, well, if that's the case, trade me. He's not happy. And their defense gave up 42 points.
I agree. They're defensively a disaster, although that was a very entertaining football game to watch.
Really was. I mean, Ben Roethlisberger did his best to try to keep them in. But, man, he's making way too many turnovers.
Yeah, he is. And they need Bell back ultimately. But Mahomes is for real. Kansas City's going to be a factor this year.
So far, in the last 6 quarters, the Steelers have given up 678 yards and 404 passing.
Unbelievable.
And then finally, of course, how about the surprising news at halftime of the Buffalo game, where Vontae Davis, a starting cornerback, puts on his clothes and quits, and then the head coach takes away the play-calling ability of defensive coordinator Leslie Frazier.
The Frazier thing, I guess, wasn't a surprise, and the other thing was a surprise, although I thought his explanation was interesting today. As opposed to just saying, this stinks and I hate it here, it's like, instead he said that, you know, I really didn't feel like I had it to give anymore and I owed it to my teammates to do it, which was an interesting reaction to the whole thing, I thought.
And I thought it was interesting to see what his teammates said, is like they thought it was disrespect to them. So what's on Bob Grimes and Tom today?
We're the Seahawks pregame show for 2 hours, basically. We'll get you ready for the Seahawks and the Bears.
Oh, there you go. Okay, well, that'll be fantastic, and we'll talk to you tomorrow, and I'll be back tomorrow at 10, be on the broadcast tonight. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.